8:15. It is a huge First Nations land claim, 9 million acres of unceded territory in eastern Ontario, which includes much of Algonquin Park and the city of Ottawa. Negotiations began in 1991 between the Algonquins of Ontario and the provincial and federal governments. Those talks have reached a pivotal stage with an agreement in principle. All this week, eligible Algonquins are voting on whether to accept that agreement. Robert Potts is principal negotiator for and senior legal counsel to the Algonquins of Ontario. He's also a partner at Blaney McMurtry LLP. Robert Potts joins us now to talk about the negotiations and what's at stake with this vote. Good morning.
Good morning, Wei, and good morning to your listeners.
Yeah.
It looks like March has come in like a lion.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about the significance of this vote at this time.
Well, firstly, the fact is that this is a vote, and this is a unique thing happening here because we're doing essentially a treaty. And across Canada, there have been several treaties, but none have had the opportunity to be put to an agreement in principle, which is exactly what this is. It's an agreement in principle. It isn't a final nor binding document, and the voters are given an opportunity to provide us with some direction before we move forward. And why at this time is it important? Well, we're talking about a process that has gone on for almost 250 years, where this is a piece of unfinished business for Canada at a time when we're finally giving recognition to the Aboriginal peoples of this country. And what better way to do it than to try to find a treaty with the very peoples that occupied this particular part of the country where in our nation's capital resides.
It's also unique in a way because it's not just such a large area, but it is such a large inhabited area.
Correct. This process is quite complicated and probably one of the most complicated in Canada. We're dealing with an area of roughly 9 million acres, which is the Algonquin Territory, in which there's over 1,200,000 people reside and hundreds of thousands more come up each year to recreate. We have over 80 municipalities, including, just by the way, the nation's capital, not to speak of the aptly named Algonquin Park. And within that area, of course, there are multiple commercial interests, such as hunt camps, aggregate pits, public works, etc., all of which have to be taken into consideration when we're doing this process, not forgetting the fact that the Algonquins did, in fact, have this territory as theirs, and were slowly but very clearly moved out of it by us over the last two centuries. So we're trying to deal with a bit of historical anomalies here.
Yeah, and we should clarify for people who are listening to this, who live in this area, that it doesn't necessarily affect them per se. We are talking about ceding crown land, correct?
Correct. No personal individual privately owned property is part of this transaction. As a matter of fact, at the very outset of this process, I wasn't involved. There was a statement of shared objectives that was entered into, which everyone can find, by the way, along with an awful lot of other material relating to this on the Tanakiwin, T-A-N-A-K-I-W-I-N website. But you will see that in point of fact, the understanding of the parties was that no one would have their property expropriated to solve this problem. That would be committing two wrongs, where the first one was that the Algonquins had been expropriated. We didn't see it. There was much point in reconciliation to have something like that happen.
Mm-hmm. It is, as you say, a very complicated issue, but in its simplest form, what does the land claim entail?
Well, we're dealing here with a piece of unfinished business going back, as I say, 250 years. The Royal Proclamation in 1763, which I'm sure people will start falling asleep when we talk about history, but this is critical. The government of the day expected that there would be discussions with First Nations people who had control over the lands in which we were coming. And unfortunately, the Algonquins fell between the cracks, notwithstanding that they followed the provisions of the proclamation and filed petitions. For some 200 and some, almost 250 years, it's only in 1991 did the government of the day finally get around to realizing that this is something that had to be attended to, even though the Algonquins had been loyal in the battles with the Americans and so on. They simply had gotten lost and never been dealt with. So this is a process in which the treaty is being put together, which should have been done long, long time ago.
Yeah, so it involves the transfer of land and money as well. What could it mean for those who hunt and fish?
Well, absolutely nothing, in the sense that the rights that are being translated into the document itself are no more than the rights that currently possessed by the Aboriginal people in the area. In point of fact, all the treaty is attempting to do is regularize and make clear to everyone what those rights are, so that we avoid the constant running to the courts, who are ill-equipped to deal with this type of problem, by making it clear what those rights are and ensuring that they are protected. And that would mean that with the continuation of the process that has been ongoing for many generations, is that the Algonquins will continue to harvest within the Crown lands that are available on a basis that acknowledges that there will be protection of conservation and safety as anyone else is expected to. It's just that they have certain rights that the rest of us don't, that they're going to continue to have.
What happens if voters do endorse this agreement in principle?
Well, if the voters are in favor of moving forward, the next step is to move towards a treaty, and that means that there are a myriad of negotiations that have to be completed. If you look at the agreement, you will see that there are dozens of pieces of unfinished business in the document, but we've set out the tone. We have to then engage in negotiations with municipalities over some of the lands. There has to be a completion of the zoning in relation to some of those pieces. There's going to have to be discussions with hunt camp operators and other folks like the SFL's forestry license people who are occupying some of those lands for purposes of exploiting them. There's a number of pieces of the puzzle that still have to be solved. We lead that to a treaty. There then will have to be a final vote on the agreement by the beneficiaries to ensure that it goes forward. And assuming it does go forward, the governments of Canada and Ontario will enact legislation to give it constitutional protection.
Robert Potts, thank you very much for joining us this morning to help us understand this.
I very much appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
All the best.
Robert Potts is principal negotiator for and senior legal counsel to the Algonquins of Ontario. He's also a partner at Blaney McMurtry LLP. The ratification vote on the agreement in principle is taking place until March 7th. You can learn more at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Ontario Morning.